White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 554.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello, and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with thewareagleReader.com, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our very own beloved Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
Well, John, it is it's mid-July. It's mid-July. We're about halfway through the summer, give or take a week or two. And we've got various things going on peripheral to football and basketball, among other things. I have a question I'm going to ask you about that in just a second. But not a ton going on, but we did have a big transfer. So we're going to dig into that tonight. We've got a guess the game from Jared again. We've got hopefully some listener questions. We have a few things to talk about tonight. We have an interesting chart from Bill Connolly that you brought to my attention. We'll talk about. And we've got another position battle, like historic position competition thing. So we got a lot of little things tonight, some interesting ones. How are things going for you, sir?
Going well. You know, it's summertime. You know, it's not that far away.
No.
So before you know it, it'll be football season. So enjoy the summer while you can and take advantage of it.
Absolutely.
So football's here. You're ready.
Absolutely. I'll give an update on the book in a little while. We're so excited to have the book coming along soon. Got a few other things coming your way. Well, let's see. The first thing I guess we need to point out is that we are not doing a show a week from today, not a new show. I might dig up something interesting from the archives, but we're not doing a new show, I believe. Are you? You're going on vacation?
I am.
And then I'm going on vacation a little while later, I think a couple of weeks maybe. So we'll have I'm sure our listeners won't begrudge us having a summer vacation with our families. That'll be cool. And then I think actually my vacation, I come through your neck of the woods. That'll be kind of interesting. We'll be coming out that way.
It'll be exciting.
Yeah, come out that way. And I'll be seeing you twice because we'll see you at the end of somewhere in the end of July, beginning of August. And then on our big road trip, we're going to talk about that in a little while too. So that's going on. We'll have a little bit to say about the road game road trip. I got the technology issue solved, I think. At least the going in, the post-production, I'm kind of clueless on.
This is the wishbone. Shouldn't you be knocking on wood when you say that?
Yeah.
I got the technology issues.
Oh, man. You got that right. Oh, we are the most cursed. We're the Lusitania of podcast technology. But we did have, in terms of news, we did have a big transfer. We had a few. I feel like we had a few kind of okay commitments, and well, one, the kicker, and then we got a receiver. So let's talk a little bit about that.
So the transfer is Demetrius Robinson, who is a sixth year senior when he was in high school was a five-star recruit and the number one receiver in America coming out of high school way back like in 2016 or whenever that was.
He and Eli Stove came in. Good gosh.
He went to Cal.
Well, that's his number one.
Played a full year at Cal. Was very productive there. Averaged like 15 yards a catch. Like over 700 receiving yards and 15 yards a catch. It was a big play guy. Mm. Second year, plays a couple of games, gets hurt, misses the rest of the season, red shirts. Gets homesick while he's rehabbing and redshirting, transfers to Georgia. Played the last 3 years at Georgia, didn't start last year, but you know was semi-productive, and decided to go somewhere else for his kind of with the COVID, he got the extra senior year, so he decided to go somewhere else away. And he graduated in May, so he's actually a grad transfer. So he's eligible right away. So he looked around and wanted to go somewhere. And Auburn needs a veteran receiver. He can play the slot or play outside. And so I think it's valuable in that way. He has, you know, a lot of experience, and he's played in against big teams and big games, and he's production. So, I mean, I think in that sense, he's a valuable guy to have around.
All right. I'm thrilled. We needed somebody that can catch a football. The only question I have is, what do you make of his experience at Georgia? And how should we look at that, as a yellow flashing light, or what do you think?
I think when he got there, he was immediately eligible after his redshirt year, but I don't think he was back all the way into football shape.
Okay.
He admitted that, I think. And that was the year that Georgia had a couple of guys who went on to get drafted at receiver. The one fast guy is playing for the Chiefs now, and the other guy, I can't remember. So they had a couple guys. So he was playing behind them and didn't play a whole lot. So then the next year was 2019, right? And in 2019, he had 30 catches for 333 yards, averaged 11 yards a catch. He had 6 carries for 52 yards.
Wow.
So, you know, he was productive. You know, not a huge amount, but so I think when we're talking about this guy, we're talking about what to expect. I think Eli Stove is a good comparison. Mm. You know, I think he's a guy who's explosive and he's athletic, but he's not as super fast as he was before he got injured, probably the same as Stove, but good with the ball in his hand. So a good guy for, you know, like the screens and reverses and that kind of stuff. But also just a good, dependable receiver too, a guy who can run routes and stuff. I think, you know, he got some playing time at Georgia in 19, and then in 20, not as much. Now, Georgia had some real quarterback issues at times last year. And then also, I think, like, he's kind of got passed by a couple of high-profile recruits there. So I think that's why he was looking around. So.
Okay. Well, so, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I just – for whatever reason, historically, at least in the last 10 or 15 years, it seems like whenever we bring in a transfer receiver, they just never pan out. Even when they do well at first, something ends up happening over and over and over, you know.
That's
and
fair.
I don't – you know, I mean, honestly, Duke Williams, he kind of crapped out, and yet – he did the best of any of them. That Farrar guy, whatever, the last couple of years, didn't do a thing, right? Might as well not even been on the roster. And there have been others. So I just a position that I look at and go, he's got to show me something before I get too excited about him. But I am glad to have him on the roster.
I'm not saying he's going to be a star, right? He's going to be a difference maker. But I think we needed a veteran receiver. We needed one guy, especially early in the season. It's third down. We need to get open and make a catch. And I think he can do that.
Yeah. Well, cool. So we got him. We got us a receiver, and we got the best kicker in the country. I keep saying this. Auburn always has a really good kicker. And I said on Twitter, I said it, and I may have said it on last week's episode, I would go back to the last year that we had any real issues with kicking was probably 86. And that's a long time ago.
That's a long time ago.
But we've had like a 1, 2, 3, or 4 year kicker, one after the other after the other, starting with Win Lyle in 87. Now, when I said that on Twitter, a couple people said, well, what about Al Del Greco? What about, you know, before that? What about Gardner Jim? I'm like, yeah, they were great, but they weren't in a streak with anybody. There's been a couple of years in the mid 80s.
There were some gaps, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The last gap we had was like Chris Knapp, Chris Johnson era in the mid-80s, and we solved that problem bringing in Win Lyle for 3 years. And then somebody said, what about Jim Von Wide left? And I'm like, I don't remember in general him being bad, but I know he hit that field goal against Florida State, and to me, that's all that mattered in 1990. Knocked that big field goal through in 90, and you're good. You are good to go. But we've had, you know, the fact that I could probably sit here, and I'm not going to, don't worry, you don't have to tune out. I could name our kickers going all the way back, you know, to the very beginning, to like the Pat Dye era. It's just remarkable that we've had that many. Well, there's a few under Tuberville that it gets, there was like Baronis, you know, and Duval and right in there that gets a little fuzzy for me. But other than that, it's been pretty, pretty good. So.
And his older brother was McPherson is his kid's name. His older brother was a kicker at Florida. And so him coming to Auburn, I think, is a good thing. I was a little bit surprised, honestly.
Yeah.
But I think it goes to what you're saying, where Auburn kind of has this good kicker tradition going, though.
Really do. And it's like the least – it's like the most unsung, or I guess the least sung thing, because, people talk about our running backs, and, we've had really good linebackers over the years and, various
defensive
positions.
Defensive line.
Oh, yeah. Over the years, we've had that. But nobody ever talks about the fact that we've just always had really solid, dependable to excellent kicking. And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago on here. We went kind of down the list of a bunch of them. But yeah, no offense to the Chris's from the mid-80s. You guys were, okay, I guess. But the reason that 86 always stands out to me is I still remember when we went off to play in the Hall of Fame Bowl that December against, or January 1st against USC. And Pat Dye was asked, what is your, there was like a list of questions they asked him, and it was written down, and it said, what is your team's biggest weakness? And he put place kicking. What a shots fired on the kicker, man. Wow.
When you are personally identified as the team's weakness, it might be a problem.
Yeah. So, all right. So we got, again, we picked up a couple other players. We got some three stars. Yeah. I am worried a little bit about our three-star rush because we know how that balance thing that we talked about last week works, where you can't have more three stars than you do everything else combined. That's not good. But
yeah. So again, I'm not stressing about recruiting in July. I'm just not.
Yeah. No.
And I think a real thing for this coaching staff is nobody has any idea what this team is going to look like. Right.
No.
Like in terms of like the offense and the defense and stuff. And I think it's tough to sell that when you don't have something to show. And I think as soon as they do, they can go, look, there's you, out there doing that.
Yeah. I have a quick question I'm going to insert here, because there's been a lot of debate about this on one of the Auburn mailing lists. And I've really just not said anything much because the whole thing puzzles me. There have been some people saying, because there's been a change in the athletic department this week, that retired colonel or general, I don't want to disparage his rank, whichever he is that was probably part of the search committee and everything, he has been moved into an office in the athletic department. And there's talk that he's like coming in to kind of shake things up, or that they're not fully confident in Alan Green's leadership or something. And so some people have said, oh, Alan Green is already messed up and he has to go. Other people are like, he's been there 3 years. Nothing really is his responsibility yet, and he's trying to raise money. That's the main thing. One thing, and I wanted to get your opinion on that, but one thing that I thought was interesting is somebody pointed out Green was hired by Leith, who was planning on being very involved in the athletic department. And Green was hired mainly to be a fundraiser for an athletic department where the actual university president was going to do a lot of the main decision making. But that changed almost immediately, and Green got a lot of responsibility put on him that apparently was not originally planning, they were not originally planning to put on him, with the replacement of the president, a couple of years ago. So what are your thoughts on that, if any? I'm just curious because I don't know enough to speak that intelligently.
I don't know a whole bunch about the internal politics of that stuff, but I would just say, don't hire people unless they're the best person for the job and you think they could really do it. So,
and I don't, who's he hired? I mean, other than the new basketball, women's basketball coach, he didn't mess up. I mean,
Carson.
If you look, yeah, but if you look back, there was one that came to my mind, it just lit my mind, but, a lot of it goes back to Jay Jacobs, sadly. I mean, it just does. A lot of the stuff that we're still dealing with now, Jacobs had some home runs and he had some strikeouts, and that's just normal. I don't mean it as to single him out as doing anything bad. He just, he had some highs and he had some lows in his career, and that's just kind of your batting average when you're when you're hiring people. You don't know how it's going to work out. He does get a lot of the blame for running off Marsh, our great swim coach, but he also brought in Bruce Pearl.
That's right.
I'll take that trade.
Yeah, that's worth a lot. The Bruce Pearl one is worth a lot.
Absolutely. So I like Alan Green. I want him to succeed, and I just feel like maybe we haven't I think the jury is still out on casting any blame on him for anything.
My view is, again, I think things are going okay. I mean, I'd like to see other athletic departments where things are on fire.
Well, the reason is because we finished 12th in the SEC in sports this past year. But it was kind of a weird year, too. And a lot of that is problems in softball that we've had for several years now, going back to a Jacobs hire, and problems in, you know, baseball's just starting to turn it around. And, you know, a number of sports are just, you know, gymnastics are on the way up, clearly. So, and equestrian is awesome. So, you know, some of our sports are on the way up, and some of them not so great, and it ended up we finished 12th. That whole ranking the programs has never made a lot of sense to me because it always seems like you can point to several sports where a school does really well and they end up finishing low, like us. So I don't know what to make.
I get it. I mean, that's a fair way to measure. If you look at the Sears Cup or whatever they call the thing, it's the traditional ranking of schools and all around sports and how their performance. That's a fair way to look at it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, hopefully football will pick up. Basketball. I mean, basketball had a bad year too, and we know that's going to pick up. So that'll make a big difference too in the rankings for sure. Nothing like getting back to the Final Four to cure what ails you in your all around sports issues.
Got that
right. That would be nice. Let's see. So you found a Bill Connolly thing, a chart on returning experience, and you were telling me this. I thought this was interesting. You were telling me it's not just returning starters; it's like contributors across the board on each team. Is that correct?
Yes, it's not just like one player started one game or something. It's about returning production and experience production, and so rushing yards, receiving yards, sacks, tackles for loss, interceptions, all that kind of stuff. And the amount you lost versus the amount coming back, basically, is expressed as a percentage. So 100% would be every single productive player in your team, starter or reserve, is coming back, right? And so the interesting thing about the numbers as a whole this year is that traditionally the average for a team in college football, like the last 5 years, is 62%. Mm-hmm. So that's the amount of production that will be coming back in a normal year. Because of COVID and the extra year of eligibility and all the weird stuff, the average coming back this year is 76%.
Just about 77. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, almost 77. So wow. Way more production than normal. And so it really skews the numbers when you talk about returning production. So you can't talk about, and this is an important point for all of us, you can't talk about returning experience on one team without taking that point into context. Because you're going to say, oh, man, this team has a lot of people coming back. But it's relative because everybody has a lot of people coming back.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, let's look at it. So who's got the most coming back? And it's pretty far ahead.
Ole Miss, 86%.
Wow. 26th ranked nationally in terms of returning production. Yeah. Ole Miss. I was already a little nervous about that game this fall.
Yep.
Now I'm even more nervous. If they had a defense, woo, look out.
Yeah. And again, they lost the Elijah Bolden, a really good receiver. So they've lost some players, but they got a lot coming back.
Wow!
And again, a lot of that might be defensive production. And those guys might not be good, but they're over there. So
that's true. Yeah, just because you produced doesn't mean you actually produced. If you know what I mean, you know. So, And then number two is Vanderbilt, 80%. Well, again, I'm not going to be that scared about them either. 3 and 4, it's pretty close together, 77 and 76. Mississippi State and Arkansas, it's like the lower end of the conference have the most players coming back, which is interesting. So what do you make of that? Mississippi State and Arkansas right there, 3 and 4.
I think one of the things when we get to the bottom, you're going to say like some of the teams in the conference that had great years last year, a lot of guys went to the NFL.
Right, right.
And guys were more likely to leave. And so I think Mississippi State and Arkansas had, you know, a lot of underclassmen who were productive last year. And that's the reason that they're again, but, and it's a lot, but right at the national average.
That's a good point too, is that you're going to have some of the quote unquote lesser teams up high because they depended more on their depth, on their underclassmen more. Whereas a lot of the bigger teams had a bunch of seniors out there playing a lot, probably. That's, you know, to a certain degree, that probably matters. Well, look who's number five.
Auburn, 75%. Again, a good amount of production. I don't know how transfers are calculated in this. They may not be, so that would certainly influence where Auburn is in this. But I think it's interesting.
Well, it's right around the national average of 76.7 and 75 for us. Number five in the – hey, if we're top five in anything in the conference in football right now, I'm happy, right? I'll take a top five or something. And ahead of LSU, but just by 1%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I keep being told how great LSU is going to be this year, and I keep thinking, well, that may very well be true, but after what I saw last year, I'm hard-pressed to figure out – how, but okay. I mean, you know, sure. And then Missouri in that same kind of situation we talked about where they're a lower kind of team in general and probably played a lot of people. And then this is kind of interesting to me, and this worries me, that Texas A&M and Georgia at 65 and 65. I mean, I feel like that's a couple of good rosters right there. A&M has been improving their roster, haven't they?
They have, and they had a very experienced team last year, a lot of talented players, a lot of experience, and they lost a few guys, but they got a lot of good guys coming back. And same with Georgia. I mean, they got JT Daniel coming back. They got, you know, they lost some offensive linemen and stuff, but they got some pretty good players, you know, back.
After Kentucky, 63%, and we can talk about that. I mean, Kentucky, I'm not loving the aberration that is suddenly Kentucky being this wild card good team that can bite you. I don't need that. That's Kentucky right now is like if you've been getting in a lake, a pond, and swimming around. See, now I wish I had the sound bite from Caddyshack. We have a pool and a pond. Pond would be good for you. It's like if you've been getting in this pond and swimming around, and it's been like goldfish and guppies and, you know, bass and whatever, and suddenly one of them turns into a barracuda. I don't need that barracuda suddenly nibbling on my foot when I get in the pool. I want to get in with the cupcakes, to mix my metaphors. I don't need one of the cupcakes gnawing on my foot, you know what I mean, to mix my metaphors. So I don't appreciate Kentucky suddenly being a problem when they're usually not. I don't like it.
I hear you on that.
Yeah. It disrupts the natural order of things.
Cupcake nibbling on your foot. I'm stuck there.
It should be nibbling on. But that's my point. We should be nibbling on the cupcakes. We don't need cupcakes nibbling on us. So
that's fair.
I don't need Kentucky nibbling on me. I don't need that in my life. And there they are.
I don't think anybody needs that.
No. But it makes me feel better to know that they only have 63% of their productivity coming back. So, you know, maybe that'll drop them down a peg. I don't know. Maybe they've been recruiting real well and they're going to be great. But here's the one I love. There's two that I love here. Well, there's four of the last four. I love all four of these. Let me work through with you. You may have been going to go some completely different direction with this, and I apologize, but I'm enjoying this. So, Tennessee is number 11 at 60%. Honestly, I feel like it would have been a lot higher if everybody hadn't just said screw it and left.
Truth.
they self-deported.
Adios, Knoxville.
Tennessee self-deported, and they knocked themselves down to number 11. They probably would have been the top five if they hadn't if their whole team hadn't said, hasta la vista, baby. Number 12 is South Carolina. Now, that's just sad. You were already so bad last year. Yes, I know they beat us. You were already so bad. Caveat, yes, I know. And we fired our coach, so move on. But, yeah, South Carolina was so bad last year, they fired their coach midway through the season, and they lose almost half of their productivity. That's not a good combination for South Carolina. I feel like that's a recipe for 2-10.
Again, we get to play. We have to play this team again this year. So I'm very happy to see them at the bottom of the returning productivity.
Yeah. They beat us last year for the first time ever as SEC members, and that bugs me because we had that streak going.
Mm-hmm.
Other teams like they beat Alabama a long time ago.
Yep.
But they had never beat us. There was a streak years ago where the Braves had never lost the Colorado Rockies. Like, years went by and the Braves had never lost the Rockies. And this was kind of like that. South Carolina came into the SEC in 1992, and they beat Auburn for the first time as an SEC member in 2020. That's 28 years. Now, I know we didn't play them every year, but that's not our fault. But we played them a good bit.
Yep.
And 28 years it took for them to get one off of us. And I didn't want them to have one.
Nope.
So we owe them something. 13 is Florida, 57%. I guess that's just kind of funny, right? I mean, I'm going to sneeze, so let me pause.
So Florida had a bunch of productivity. They lost the NFL. Kyle Pitts, quarterback, you know, the Tony, the little wide receiver and stuff. So that's a big chunk of this.
Yeah.
It's a couple of defensive players. So that they lost a bunch. They're going to be good again, but that's a big hit for them.
Yeah, it is a big hit because, again, that's not just returning starters like all their seniors graduated. That's productivity. That means that going into the next season, 43%, roughly 43% of what they're putting out on the field is going to be first time on the field. Players that have not contributed much before. And then down at the bottom, in last place, 14 out of 14, your, not mine or yours, the Alabama Crimson Tide, 56%. So that means they're going to finish in last the SEC, right? 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 Right?
No.
Right?
That's not.
Ah. Well, they all went to the NFL, right? 44% of their team?
Yes. Basically, yes.
Jeez. And didn't I see that their last recruiting class has like the most 5 stars in history or something like that? Just some ridiculous statistic?
Something like that. I'm not contributing to that propaganda.
But, you know, when you look at that list, though, that other list I think we talked about, that list where they showed, you know, like what percentage of your players are 5, 4, 3, whatever, it looked like the freaking playoffs the last 8 years. It was like Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Georgia. Who was the other one? Well, who was the other one always in the playoffs? Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma,
Ohio
Georgia.
State.
Ohio State, right. Yeah, they were the top five. I'm like, well, this isn't even a chance. It's like, you know, you play 12, 13, 14, how many ever games to determine a champion, and you might as well just have looked at the player star rankings at the beginning of the season and said, well, here they are. Why do we even play the game? It's like, it's gotten to the point almost of Formula One where you're like, all right, Mercedes, maybe Red Bull, maybe Ferrari will surprise, and other than that, why even put them out there? You already know who's going to be first, second, third, fourth, fifth, you know.
I think that's fair. I think that's one of the reasons to expand the playoff.
Yeah.
Is to make those teams have to play a couple other tough games.
It's just because it's the same ones every time.
Give some other people a shot, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so any other thoughts about that? Because that was your baby. I didn't mean to hijack it. I just thought that was really interesting.
No, it was good. I just think like it was entertaining to look back at that data. Interesting.
Our next topic before we get to our break is fullbacks. Woohoo! Fullback, an interesting position. It's one that, how do you see the fullback? Is it one that you still feel is relevant today? Or, I mean, you know what I mean? How do you look at that position?
I mean, in modern football, it's basically been replaced by a wide receiver. Very few teams use a fullback. Everybody's playing 3 or 4 wide receivers. And it's always been the unsung position because most of its job is blocking. Sometimes they get to carry the ball. Sometimes they catch a pass. But most of the job is blocking. And so we have a list of players here, some of whom were, you know, good runners and some of whom were good receivers, but a lot of the job was blocking.
Before, you know, let me pause. I was just looking to see if I could find they don't even have their own category, do they?
No, there's no good stats about fullbacks. So
that's crazy. But I wanted to point this out because this is something that I didn't realize was this extreme. There's a category in the Auburn book, press book, not our book, but the
media guide.
Media guide. Touchdowns responsible for. Who do you think, off the top of your head, is far and away number one, the most touchdowns responsible for in Auburn football history? And this surprised me. Far and away number one. It's not close.
I mean,
it's interesting, isn't it?
Nick Marshall.
Nick Marshall is number three in just 2 seasons, 2013-2014. He rushed for 23. He passed for 34 for a total of 57 touchdowns in 2 seasons. But there are 2 players ahead of him. Number two, I'm not going to tell you the names yet.
Damian Craig.
Number two is Damian Craig with 58, so one more. So you got Damian Craig with 58, Nick Marshall with 57. By the way, number four is Jason Campbell with 54, and a lot more passing, a lot fewer rushing. And number five is Stan White, over 4 years. Here's what's interesting. Stan White has, this is great, John. Stan White in 4 years has 51 touchdowns. Cam Newton in 1 year has 50. Stan is ahead of Cam Newton by one touchdown in three more seasons played. If Cam had averaged that across 4 years of football, he'd have 200 touchdowns. That would just be ridiculous.
He obliterated the record.
Oh, yeah. So number six is Cam. Number seven is a tie between Brandon Cox and Cadillac. That's interesting. Brandon Cox ran for four. Carnell ran for 45, so a little difference there. But Cadillac did throw one, I think, against Georgia. Number nine after seven tied, right? Number nine is Bo. So Bo Jackson is at number nine, tied with Jarrett Stidham. Bo Jackson and Jarrett Stidham. You think of them in the same breath, right? Number 11, Patrick Nix. Number 12, Kerryon Johnson. Number 13, Joe Cribbs. Okay, now we've talked about who 2 through 13 are. Who's number one? And it's not close. It's 13 more than Damian Craig. Craig has 58. Number one has 71 touchdowns. Crazy?
No, I don't. Honestly, don't know.
Who's the other Heisman winner?
Oh, Sullivan.
Yes. That surprised me, though. Pat Sullivan, 71. He threw for 53, which is still more than anybody else. Yeah. Only Jason Campbell is even close to that. At 45. He threw for 53, but he ran for 18, which is just one fewer than Damian Craig.
Mm-hmm.
And two fewer than Cam Newton. Wow.
Underrated as a runner.
Yes, absolutely. So you got quarterback, 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 Cadillac, Bo, quarterback, quarterback, Kerryon Johnson, Joe Cribbs. Okay, I just thought that was interesting. I will put that away. Now, let's talk about fullbacks and H-backs really quickly. Because actually, you came up with some, and then I came up with some. I think we have a pretty nice, comprehensive list of our more prominent fullbacks. So where do you want to begin?
I mean, there's not one that I think is like head and shoulders above everybody else here.
Yeah.
I agree. You know, we talked about quarterbacks, the Pat Sullivan, Cam level. I think there's a bunch of very good ones. So we don't have them in chronological order or anything. So I think just walk through them.
Okay. Well, the one that came to my mind first that I threw up there was Tommy Agee. And, you know, what happened was Greg Pratt passed away of like a heat stroke, going into the 83 season. And so Agee was a freshman and he kind of got thrust into the limelight blocking for Bo Jackson and Brent Fullwood. Not a bad place to start out your career as a fullback, blocking for those guys.
They make you look good.
Oh, and he had a great 4-year career and then went off as a great career blocking for Emmitt Smith at the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, Tommy Agee lived the life of a fullback, right? What fullback in history can say I blocked for Bo Jackson and Emmitt Smith both? That's tough, right?
Pretty good.
That's pretty good. And he got him some Super Bowl rings, I assume, too, doing that. So Agee, from the time he was a freshman, he was in that Sugar Bowl game, had a big game against Maryland. I tell you this, he's got a few things interesting about him in our book, so people can be on the lookout for that. So I love Tommy Agee. Who you want to throw out? Let's kind of go back and forth. Who you want to throw out?
The first one that came to mind for me was Jay Prosh.
Yeah. Yes. Illinois transfer.
Right. People forget that he started his career at Illinois, and we weren't sure what we had out of him. But after a while, we realized we had an absolute hammer in the running game.
His first year was 12, and it was terrible.
Yes. And the offense didn't really make sense. He is as a blocker in that great running game was a difference maker.
Oh, 2013.
He was a difference maker on the edge and in the middle.
Blocking for Trey and blocking for Cameron Artis Payne. And
Nick Marshall.
And Grant. Oh, yeah. And McCaleb and Fannin. We had so many good running backs back then. Good gosh. Oh, we had so many good running backs and the quarterback. So, yeah, Prosh was awesome. He was just such a pure – he was a throwback, pure blocker. He wasn't going to – I think they gave him the ball a half a dozen times in his career, and he gained about a yard every time.
That's right.
But he could open up a hole for Trey Mason or Artis Payne. What about Reed McMillan, who kind of toiled away in relative obscurity until one Saturday in 1993 when the snows fell on Arkansas and he got nice and chilled and he went off.
Again, he was a big fullback on like 93 team that went undefeated and did the job with in front of Steven Davis and Bostic.
Yep.
But you're right, in the snow in that 93 game, he stepped up and carried the ball and was the main ball carrier that day, and then bad weather made a big difference.
It did. Supposedly he would overheat. And they got him out there in the freezing cold and he's like, I feel good now, you know. There's a little bit about that in the book. Let's see, who we not who your turn, who you got?
I was going to throw out Fred Beasley.
Oh, you know, such a great pass catcher out of the backfield. Oh,
yeah. And a late die area player who went on to have a really good NFL career as a fullback. But, you know, and not a little bit more of a running back fullback, right? Not a pure fullback like some of these other guys, but a very versatile player and productive.
I think it was Cole Kubelik that told me in the book – and again, I want to give stuff away. You got to get the book. Comes out in August, folks. Comes out in August. But Cole said, because he was on the team with Fred Beasley at least 1 year, and I think he was talking about, I forget which year, maybe it was 98 or 99, and he said we should have just stuck Fred Beasley at tailback, and I forget who he said at fullback, and just run out of the I formation, but we didn't do it. And he says, I kind of wish we had done that. And I think Beasley would have been a great tailback.
Yes, yes.
Tony Richardson is one that was on that 90 team that beat Florida State. He and Beasley were there kind of back-to-back as just those good, solid future NFL fullbacks that could catch passes, that could mm-hmm. make somebody miss in space. I mean, you know, there's two kinds of fullbacks. There's the kind that kind of blast up the middle and open holes. They're not that great necessarily with the ball in their hands, but they're good at helping somebody else. But then there's the ones that are very nimble and can get into space and can catch a pass in the flat and make or a screen pass and make something out of it. Beasley was that way, and I remember Tony Richardson was that way. He went on to a good career, I think, with the Chiefs, mm-hmm. number 40.
Eric Smith, yeah. Another guy.
Cam, you know, on the team.
On the 2010 team, a valuable receiver at that mm-hmm. position. That was really his job. Block occasionally and then catch a pass.
And he was kind of like the enforcer. He was the guy that, you know, that was a team. That, I think that's one of the things interesting when teams transition from one coach to another. That 2010 team, there was a surprising amount of finesse on that 2010 team. And we think about Cam and his power. But there was a lot of finesse on that team. Eric Smith's job was to be like, you know, the guy on the hockey team that has a few teeth missing and gets in the face of the players that mess with you. And they're like, well, you ain't pushing us around, you know. And Eric Smith would get penalized. He'd mm-hmm. get a flag thrown on him. But that was kind of his job, was to get the personal foul, but show the other team they weren't messing with us. And he did it. He was good at it. I'll never forget, though, him dropping that. It wasn't his fault. Dropping that against Oregon. He had a touchdown against Oregon. But we ended up getting the safety on the next play, so it didn't matter. So I recently rewatched that.
Rather have had the touchdown.
But yeah. Brandon Johnson, the shrimp fisherman from Bayou LaBatre.
So, yeah, another old-school fullback.
Yes.
Right? I mean, I'm primarily a blocker, occasionally caught a pass, whatever, but – Not nimble as you described earlier.
No,
kind of a solid blocky guy, but a solid productive running back on some of those.
Just a fire hydrant, just a bull. You know, he did all that shrimp fishing like Forrest Gump in the off season. But he'd go out there and block for Ronnie Brown and Cadillac in 2002, 2003, and he was such an important piece of that offense mm-hmm. those years. All right, we're a little over halfway through them. Who else you want to talk about? There's some
William Andrews.
Oh, William Andrews, man.
When I think William Andrews, of course, the first thing I think is for a long time he was the Falcons' all-time leading rusher. He's been surpassed now, but he was that for many years. But primarily a fullback at Auburn in the early thigh days.
Well, it was at the end of Barfield, really.
That's what I'm saying. The end of Barfield.
Yeah.
And a really, you know, solid, productive fullback, a good blocker in the wishbone, but just a really tough, hard-nosed runner with the ball.
Yeah. Well, when you got Brooks and Cribbs on the same team, mm-hmm. you're not going to get a lot of carries at tailback, you know. So you got to get him on the field somehow. I don't remember him well enough. I need to go back and find some game film and break down some Falcons game film from the early 80s to see Andrew. I think didn't he hurt his knee or something, and that kind of ended his career or kind of brought it prematurely to an end, something like that. Let's see who I haven't mentioned. We talked about, well, there's Heath Evans, of course. Heath Evans is like another classic big, tough fullback. Was he on early Tuberville, or was it? Yeah, I feel like wasn't Heath Evans on like the Tuberville early teams?
Yes, I think so. But he was a little bit of a blocker, but also a good running back and receiver. He was a productive guy with the ball in his hands.
He could do the H-back thing, I guess you could say. Yeah.
Yes, very much.
As Eric Smith was kind of that too. I think that Eric Smith's designation in that offense was H-back. We're kind of counting them together. Well, the only ones we haven't mentioned so far, Joe Frazier, who kind of played some tailback for us.
Smokin' Joe.
He played some tailback for us in 91, I remember, beating Texas on some pretty mediocre teams. He played some fullback for us maybe in 93. And then we got to talk about Chandler Cox. Had a good career for Gus. We haven't had a lot of great fullbacks under Gus, but he's one of them.
No, but I mean, he was productive. You know, people always think about the pirouette spinning top kind of thing against Clemson, but a productive player who got better over the course of his career, I think.
He did.
And contributed, you know, to some of those good rushing teams in the later Gus years.
Yeah, block for Kerryon and a couple other guys.
That's right.
Let's see. I guess Kevin McLeod and Harold Morrow are the only other ones. And they were kind of okay. Sort of workmanlike journeyman.
That's decent
fullbacks. Morrow was another one of these pass catchers. He could catch a little screen pass or a ball in the flat and get you 10 or 12 yards.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the fullbacks. I thought that was cool. Good deal. What positions do we have left? Offensive line, defensive line, something like that?
I think just offensive line. We did defensive line.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Okay. We've gone through these this year. That's really been cool. All right. Let me give you a quick update on a couple of things. We don't have a Fantasy Formula One update because there was no race this past weekend, but I believe this coming weekend they're going to be racing in Britain, the British Grand Prix at Silverstone, which is going to be interesting because they're going to do a sprint race to start it out. Instead of having qualifying, they're going to have like a mini race to determine the order of the actual race. I'm looking forward to that. But the positions pretty much stayed the same as they were, I reported last week. Got to do a book update. The book is in its final proofing stages. John is looking through it, seeing if there's anything he wants to add or take out or tweak. I've kind of been adding a couple little things here and there when they occur to me through conversation. A couple people on Twitter mentioned something. I'm like, oh, that I don't think that's in there. So it is like 99.9% done, and it is on track to be out in August. I was thinking about doing a Kickstarter for it, John. I'm not really sure. Because the one thing Kickstarter does for something like this is it gives you kind of a chance to get up publicity and excitement and get pre-orders. But it's also a lot of work, and I'm going to do a Kickstarter for the Pulsar comic book, so I'm not sure I'm going to have the time to do it. May just release it and tell everybody, hey, the book is out. But I am going to have it at Dragon Con, so if you're in a Dragon Con, come by my table. I'll have a copy I can sign for you. And otherwise, it'll be on Amazon, and bookstores can order it too, and that'll be in August. And it's going to be right at 500 pages, I'm thinking. Let's see. We're going to do a new movie review podcast. We talked about this a little bit before with a rotating crew of reviewers. That's going to be a lot of fun. More about that when we know a little bit more about it. For right now, it'll just be on the White Rocket channel. So if you want to hear our first few movie reviews, just make sure you subscribe to our sister show, White Rocket Entertainment, which is kind of our pop culture channel. We don't do ads other than me telling you what our latest things are. What we do is we depend on our patrons. That's folks that go to patreon.com and commit to as little as a dollar a month. That's all we ask to be part of the show. And we have quite a few folks that are doing that, but we need more because our goal is I want to get to 150 patrons sometime this year, because then I think we can do our own channel just for the movie reviews and also to help out with our trip to Texas, which we'll talk about in a little bit at the end of the show. So instead of running a bunch of ads and stuff, we're just going to – we just thank our patrons for supporting the show. And we've gotten several new ones this past week. We got several new ones, which is so, so awesome. By the way, as soon as I thank the patrons, we're going to get into the Guess the Game segment. Everybody loves the Guess the Game from Jared. We're going to do that in just a second. But first, let me thank our current patrons who keep this show going. And we couldn't do it without you, and we couldn't do the upcoming road trip without you. So thank you guys so much. And we got John a new microphone last week, so he sounds so much better. So it's all going for a good cause. Here are the folks that currently keep our program going. We have Chris and Clinton Stewart. We have Carl Von Drucker, Christopher Burleson, Patrick Hayes, Samuel Salvatore, Allison Rich, one of our new ones, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Logan Chilton, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trewick, and Susan Trewick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Card. And by the way, remember, your name will be in the acknowledgments, the big thank you pages in the book, at the front of the book. I'm not sticking you guys at the back. Don't worry. You're not going to be back there like at the on the About the Author pages. You guys are going to be up front after the like the table of contents. It's like, here is the AU Wishbone family that made this book possible, and it lists you guys' names. And I, several people have emailed me and said, here's how I'd like my name to appear. And I'm like, thank you. That's exactly what I want to know. So if you are a patron, we've had a lot of fun with the names, and I want that to continue. But if you want your name in the book different than how it appears on the Patreon, when I call it out here, just send me a message, but be sure to tell me what your name is on here. You know, like if your name is Purple Tiger on here, say, hey, this is Purple Tiger, but I'd like you to put Joe Smith, okay? Because that way I'll know what to swap out. If you just tell me what name you want in, I won't necessarily know which name to take out. Okay, so Willie Carden, Ann Canjian, AU Falling Up, Ben and Eileen Dover, ba-da-bum, nice. Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, Eric Morgan, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rusty Owens, there's another new one, Steve Harlan, WDE Ritchie, I probably missed a couple of new ones already, so I apologize, but we got several new ones, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Blake Karen, oh, here's the trifecta, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, and Chris the Hilton, woo! Colby Butler, Danny Flack, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Di Bama, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kenoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Algorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, 76 Tiger, okay, it's Bob Sammons, Alex Nguyen, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Ben Riggis, Brandon Smith, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Colonel Dad, there's another new one, Daniel Barnett, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright, and finally, Kenneth Brent Rains, Christian Thorvaldson, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vishakana, Paul Bankson, Public Land Owner, Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Brent Rumble, Chris, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. We would love to have more. So go to www.auwishbone.com and click on the big orange button so that I can call out your name, whatever you want to call yourself, and so you can be in We Believed the Book. And now, here comes everyone's favorite segment, Guess the Game. So let's get it on, shall we?
Bring it on. Who can it be
now? Hello, John, Van, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game, episode 20. This episode's suggestion is sent in by Trey Bamberg from Twitter. So let's see what Trey has for you guys for this episode.
Is over here to the near side. Will they float one to here?
I think that's correct.
pump fake into the end zone. A touchdown, Auburn! Touchdown, Auburn! In the corner of the end zone! Gives Auburn the lead!
Nice call!
23-20 with 10 seconds to go!
Nice call, partner, nice call. I told Paul Ellen, pregame, will be involved in this passing game. Well, he makes the biggest catch of his Auburn career to take Auburn up. 23-20, extra point pending.
10 seconds to go and an extra point coming.
Okay, there you have it. Let me know what you think, and I will see you in the hint file.
Wow. I the beeps always crack me up because I feel like they're cussing.
So my first thought was the Oregon game.
Well, it sounded like Rod, so that would be the right time frame. My first thought is Ole Miss when Cody Burns threw the pass to Cam Newton for the touchdown. But I didn't think we were like behind Ole Miss.
No, that halftime. Was the first score of the game, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't like that one.
Okay. I've learned my lesson the last couple of weeks. I've learned that I get way too confident and cocky, and then I mess up. So
how about that Kentucky that year? We came back, right? Weren't they ahead?
We were ahead. They came back, and then we went on that long drive to kick the field goal at the end, just like the Oregon game.
Not that.
Yeah, that was so weird. Cam ran all over him in like the first half. In the second half, we suddenly couldn't do anything. That was a weird game. I was at that one.
It's maybe a different season.
Could be. Well, he says, I said before the game that so-and-so would be involved in the passing game. And see, that doesn't...
So not a regular receiver.
It doesn't sound like Cam either because he was always involved in the passing game.
Maybe a running back. Maybe a tight end.
Or, well, it's not when Cadillac threw the touchdown pass to Anthony Mix against Georgia, is it, 2004? Because we just talked a minute ago about Cadillac had that one touchdown pass.
No, because this game they're talking about was close.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We were beating their tails. I didn't fully appreciate how badly we were killing Georgia that day. Yeah, again, this is a game where we were trailing at half until that play right before halftime. Well, but, you know, it could be Ole Miss, though, because we did struggle in the first half in 2010. We always came back in the second half.
No, I thought this was the end of the game they were talking about.
No, I think this was before halftime. Let me go back.
You want to do the hint file at this point?
Yeah, let's just do the hint file. That makes sense. Someone's been all night. All right, let's see.
All right, fellas, we are now in the hint file, so let's listen to that with no bleeps.
Uzama is over here to the near side. Will they float one to CJ here?
I think that's correct.
Marshall, pump fake into the end zone. Uzama, touchdown, Auburn! Touchdown, Auburn! CJ in the corner of the end zone. CJ Uzama gives Auburn the lead.
Nice call.
23-20 with 10 seconds to go.
Nice call, partner. Nice call. I told Paul Allen pregame, CJ Uzama will be involved in this passing game. Well, he makes the biggest catch of his Auburn career to take Auburn up. 23-20, extra point pending.
10 seconds to go and an extra point coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's probably all coming together now, and we'll find out when I see you in the answer file.
Yeah, I know exactly what it is. You know what it is? Who the opponent was?
No.
It's 2013, Mississippi State. That was like game three. They were beating us.
Yeah, we struggled in that game.
We didn't play.
We weren't clicking yet.
And then Marshall hit the pass to Uzoma on like the last play of the game almost. Because I'll never forget those Mississippi State girls sitting there in the stands. And they were the whole game. They were just like, ooh. And then he caught that ball and the camera went to him. They're like, you know. The dog, their little brown bulldog got run over. So yeah, I'm 99.999% sure it's Mississippi State 2013. Are you good with that?
I'm good with it.
All right, let's hear Jared wrap it up here.
Okay, gentlemen, if you guess that this was Auburn playing Mississippi State in 2017, I'm just kidding. I wanted you to worry for a second. It was 2013. So yes, this is Auburn and Mississippi State in 2013. I suspect you might have got it, but hey, more importantly, I hope you had some fun. I have received several suggestions for guess the game over the last week, so I am set for quite a while, but that doesn't mean you can't still send them in. You can reach out directly to me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It is all at Yard Sale Artist. And with that, I want to once again thank Trey Bamberg for his suggestion. We appreciate it. John Van, War Eagle.
Thank you, Jared and Trey. That was fun.
Yeah. I had my mute on. Yeah, another good challenging one. Always a good job. I like that one because my mistake there, you got that it was the end of the game. For some reason, I was thinking it was the end of the half, but you were absolutely right. It was the end of the game, and so that threw me off a little bit. But no, I don't think I would have when I heard Uzoma and certainly Marshall, those two, that was the time they hit the big play. So that was before we had really settled into being a bulldozer of an option run team, and we were still trying to do that thing where Gus would always try to turn us into a passing team.
Yeah, we were throwing it too much.
Yeah, yeah. So, very cool. All right, well, I guess at this point, I just have to find the right button to push. And
thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
I'm having a sneezing fit. So what's new from our listeners?
We got a couple. Right. First is from Bill Miner on Twitter, who says, going along with the position group discussion, which new coach do you think will make the biggest difference? Confidence in group is partially a function of coaching. I'm thinking Harsin and Bobo will improve the QBs the most. So which position coach do you think will make the most difference with their group?
Well, we certainly have to hope that that's true about Harsin and Bobo and the quarterbacks. But to me, everything still goes back to the offensive line. I mean, we just got to get good offensive line play and everything else will follow. There was some weird statistic that came out I saw yesterday or today where the Auburn offense was like really highly ranked, but somebody pointed out it was because Nick's had to run for his life all the time or something?
Yeah, no, there was a ranking that came out of the weekend, and I think it was retweeted by like the LSU, one of the LSU fan sites, and it had Auburn's offensive line ranked number one coming back in the SEC.
Yeah, what the heck was that?
Well, they were just looking, again, this is the danger of looking at numbers without context and watching the games and stuff. Right. And on the raw stats, Auburn has a lot of returning experience, and you know, the sack rate was relatively low and the run production numbers were good. But one of the reasons the sack rate thing was so low is that Bo Nix was running for his life and took off sprinting at the snap of the ball.
Yeah.
Not because he had all day to throw it. So, because he was elusive, he wasn't often sacked behind the line.
That's it.
That doesn't mean the pass protection was good. So this is a case of where you can't just look at those numbers and make some conclusion. I just did not agree with that ranking. So.
Yeah, yeah. I just thought that was interesting. Yeah.
But no, I like Will Friend as the pick in terms of I was thinking him too.
Yeah.
In terms of making a difference. I'd be interested to see, you know, what – and I think that's a position where honestly, like, you know, like you said last week or week before, the guy last year I think made a little bit of a difference with the offensive line. But before that –
yeah,
you know, I really needed some new blood at coaching at that position. I'm kind of also interested to see what our new wide receivers coach does.
Yeah, that's so true. I'm interested in all of them because everything I've seen has indicated that they're all really good, and I don't feel like we're taking a step down anywhere on defense either. I mean, certainly our defensive coaches the last few years have been pretty good, but I don't feel like we traded in that. For, you know, with Derek Watson and company, I don't feel like we took a step back there either. So I think the defense will continue to be kind of where it has been, and then the offense hopefully will get better. So
that's right. No, I agree 100%. So yeah, I think that it's managed to see, but those are the two big choices.
Yeah.
All right. Our other listener question is from friend of the program, Willie Carden.
Yeah, Willie.
Who says, War Eagle crew. Here's the super condensed version of all the emails I was going to email you over the last month. number one, he said, at first I disagreed about Cam being the overwhelming best QB, Auburn QB ever. And then I went back and looked at his stats. I was wrong. I was at almost every game for the 2004 season with Jason Campbell, and I love him.
Yes.
Nothing against Cam. But Jason's 2004 stats were awesome, but not Cam awesome.
Yeah.
Number two, he said Rudy Johnson's long run in the Wyoming game was maybe the best single run by an Auburn running back aside from anything Bo Jackson ever did.
Oh, I remember. Yeah. I believe that's the one where like every Wyoming player like bounced off of him twice or something.
Just yes. It was a great run, a long run, and he broke 15 tackles in that run. It was really good.
Yeah.
All right. And number three, with the new playoff format, the first thing I thought of was this. What do you think the chances are that the first year Auburn gets in, they will have played Auburn and Georgia, then Georgia in the SEC championship game, then be in the playoff with both of those teams potentially playing them yet again? Imagine playing Georgia three times.
Oh,
if you know Auburn football, you know that's probably more likely than not.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy, but well, the day will come. If you took 40 seasons of SEC football, that would happen at least once.
Yes. It's truth. So he said, and then he just ends. He says, love you guys. Getting excited about the season, Willie.
Yeah, we love you too, Willie. That's awesome, man. That's really good. I'm glad he finally decided to send us his novel he's been writing. That was funny. He was telling us he kept adding to it and never sending it.
But no, that's it for us for questions. Those were two good ones, and we need more. So you, the listener, follow in Willie's footsteps and send your listener questions to @JKRinger on Twitter or auwishbone@gmail.com.
And if you don't like the number of questions, folks,
blame yourself.
That's right. That's exactly. There you go. All right. Our last stop, and I just minimized the dang thing, but our last stop, of course, as always, is we drag out the B-52s for this. This is how we're going to get banned from Spotify for playing.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
Day is coming when we get banned from Spotify because we play a little snippet of that song. Around the SEC, I mean, I guess the main thing we're thinking about right now is that we're going to be traveling around the SEC coming up. And you had a request of our listeners as pertains to our AU Wishbone road game road trip.
Yes, we are going to Texas A&M. Very exciting. It's the first weekend in November. We'll be traveling into Houston and then going to College Station. And we'll be there Thursday night, then Friday and Saturday. Spend Saturday at the game and Friday kind of traveling around the area, seeing the campus and the town and going to eat some good Texas barbecue. So one or two other things. And we hope to see you there. If you are traveling to that game, let us know. And if you've been there before and there were things that you experienced and enjoyed, either activities at the game or in the area or good places to eat or whatever, let us know.
And, of course, John and I are planning on sleeping in the rental car. John will be in the trunk and I'll be in the back seat. So that'll be just to save money. So I tell you,
we're going to sleep in the stadium.
There you go. I was going to say, in our younger days, we might have considered doing that. I've actually, when I was a student at Auburn, I actually slept on Panama City Beach one night. And took a shower in the water sprinkler at the hotel. So if I can do that, man, but those days are long gone. No, we'll find us someplace halfway decent, I'm sure. Where the bugs hopefully aren't so big that they carry our luggage away in the middle of the night. But that'll be fun. It's gonna be a lot of fun. And we're all about the food. I'm gonna have to go on like a super diet and get on the exercise machine for like a month before that trip to make sure I don't like grow out all my clothes while we're on that trip. But I did go ahead and make a few more technological investments this week. I got us a good audio recorder so that, you know, the main thing we want to get out of this is some good audio. We're going to do a movie review and we're going to do a lot of audio. Basically, we're going to do an AU Wishbone on the run, on the road. And so I got us a good little audio recorder that's going to let us have some good quality audio rather than just using the phone or something. So that'll be good. And we appreciate the patrons helping with that. And then also, I'm upgrading my phone. I looked at getting some kind of a video camera, but somebody, maybe it was Auburn Elvis, even suggested, why not just use a phone? I'm like, well, my phone sucks, so I don't want to do that. But I'm going to go ahead and I'm like 2 years beyond upgrading my phone. So I went ahead today and pulled the trigger on that. So I'm going to have a new phone, and I'm just going to use that for our camera, and hopefully I won't lose it. Hopefully it won't go out the window of the car while we're trying to drive down the interstate. So we should have some good audio, some good video, I'm hoping on lots of good content coming out of this. In addition to having a good time.
Auburn scores big touchdown late in the game, man. throw his hands up in the air.
That's how I destroyed my little radio in the 93 Iron Bowl when Bostic busted that run. Or was it, you know, it may have been when Nick's to Sanders, the touchdown. I think that was it. I had it in my coat pocket, and I jumped up and down, and it flew out and hit the concrete of Jordan-Hare upper deck and exploded. And I'm like, well, won't be listening anymore to Jim 5 today. But anyway, we're looking forward to this road trip. We hope that you guys can give us some good suggestions and hopefully some good technical advice when it comes time to edit it all together, at least the video. I'm great with audio editing. I'm terrible with video editing, so we'll see how that goes. Any last thoughts, John?
Football season will be here before you know it. So enjoy every weekend that you have before we have to, you know, the season is wonderful, but it's also a long grind and it takes up a lot of time. So enjoy those Saturdays before they're filled with college.
Savor the anticipation. And remember what I always say before every season, which is it's like we're like the season's almost here. The season's almost here. The season's almost here. Good Lord, it's week 6. That's what always happens. So you got to pace yourself and you got to savor that anticipation because the season goes by so fast, but the savoring of the buildup to it is what really seems to go on forever and you got to really find a way to enjoy it. Remember, we won't have a live show a week from today, but I'll pull up something from maybe the quarantine, maybe like the 2004 versus 2010 or something. I'll find a good one and we'll do that. Yeah.
So I missed one question.
Oh, go ahead.
We're going backwards.
Addendum.
Back into the Worcester questions. Carl Von Drucker on Twitter said,
yes.
Who does Brian Harsin choose to take with him to SEC Media Days?
Oh, that is a good question, Carl. Got to be Bo Nix. Bo's got to go. It would be an incredible lack of faith in your quarterback if you don't take him when he's been around a couple of years. Tank?
Mm-hmm. I mean, an experienced defensive player. I think one of the linebackers, probably.
Yeah.
Or McCreary.
Yeah. I feel confident in that combination. It's Bo Nix, maybe McCreary or some other defensive player, maybe Tank, maybe some senior.
Again, some of it is the upperclassman thing, right?
Anders?
Tank's a star. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
The bookstore. Could be. All right. Yeah, I'm glad you found that. That was a good question. But listener questions for this week.
Will soon be beyond my concern.
That's right, because we're to the end. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks with a live show. But again, I'll find something cool to rerun on next week. That's it from here. Our time is up. We thank you for your work, John.
Where are you, man?
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.